The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. One second. Yeah, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show? I forgot to turn the computer on. Let me just walk over here and I'll boot up my computer because I don't want... Oh, crap, I just... Never mind, it's okay, I got another one. Leave it there, the cat will get it. Got a little tune here, a little song to sing for you. That Nicole, she does something. She's really there.
You have no idea.
And does things.
Yeah.
The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh my God. All right, more on that in a moment. But first, a little levity.
Howdy, folks. Mangy Fetlocks here. The undisputed drama queen of the House of Representatives, Marjorie Taylor Greene, is called to vacate the chair to get rid of little Mike Johnson. Crazy Marge has an opening she's longing to have filled, and she's looking for a slightly larger Johnson.
Yeah.
The last Johnson she auditioned wasn't quite what she desired, so a bigger, firmer Johnson is what she feels is required. When a Johnson fails to please her, Margie boldly says, "You're fired." That's a saying that her Lord and Savior Donald Trump inspired. I guess she felt that Mike Johnson just doesn't know the meaning of hard work. Thanks for listening.
Mangy Fetlocks, our pal Bruce W. Nelson, everybody. Oh, my goodness. I needed that today. You have no idea. So when we last met on Friday, I was having tech problems. The gremlins were out in force. I spent most of the weekend wrestling with this system, trying to call the people who... the software that I use to stream video to YouTube and other places is a program called Wirecast, and it's a company called Telestream. Well, I pay them $100 a year, a little more, to keep my Wirecast license updated and for technical support. Used to be I could get a phone call. Now everything is screwy again. The sync is off. Get ready for that, because this is what's going to be today. I dealt with Microsoft. I dealt with Telestream, Wirecast, and no phone support. I dealt with, and then there were the T-Mobile problems all weekend. I'm so teched out that, and the stream is fucked up again. So, I'm on a roll. I spent 3 hours today with T-Mobile. Still haven't gotten resolution from, and Google, YouTube. I was on with everybody this weekend and nothing. Well, my phone is now resolved, but that's about it. Hopefully your video stream is good. Over here, it says it's not. I'm at my wit's end. I really, really kind of don't know what to do. And then this morning, we see that if you're rich enough, you know, you get your fines lessened. You get off. You can commit crimes. Doesn't matter. As long as you have enough money to pay the lawyers or enough idiots out there who will send you money thinking that you deserve to be president and the money's going to be used to pay your legal fees, you get the bond you need to post reduced from, where is it? I don't know, almost half a billion dollars to $175 million. Now, for me, it doesn't matter. It could be $465 million or $175 million. Same thing. And I think that's the case for Donald Trump too. But he lies so prodigiously that people just believe him. Nothing makes sense anymore. I don't know what to do. I honestly don't know what to do. Part of me says I should just give it all up Believe me, it's a consideration, but I can't afford to do that. So here we are. It's okay because, you know, you guys are also canceling on me left and right. There's some organization called Chartable, and Chartable tells you where your show ranks, you know, internationally. And apparently some person who, you know, made a comment that went out to everybody and said, unfollowed, genocide. I followed her for years, but no more. So let me address this now because, you know, if you want to unfollow me, feel free. Go ahead. What happened today, I believe I took this story in between arguing with T-Mobile. Did I not? Okay, here. The UN Security Council passes its first resolution calling for a Gaza ceasefire after four failed attempts. The U.S. abstained, but at least they didn't veto it. This resolution, backed by 14 nations, including Russia and China, demands an immediate ceasefire during the month of Ramadan and the release of all the hostages. That's the important part. Release the fucking hostages. This wouldn't be happening if Hamas didn't come in and attack mercilessly innocent civilians and take a number of them, hundreds of them hostage, and rape and torture and mutilate them as well. Four previous ceasefire resolutions has failed, including one proposed by the U.S. on Friday. The American abstention is likely to further strain U.S. relations with Israel amid sharp disagreements over Israel's planned military offensive in Rafah. I believe a few things. I believe everyone has a right to live. I believe there needs to be a two-state solution. I believe the West Bank occupation of by Israelis is illegal and immoral and criminal, and that needs to stop. Netanyahu's in favor of it. He needs to go. I support Chuck Schumer for his speech last week, saying they need to hold new elections. The thing I disagree with is that they need to wait. What Chuck Schumer said, that they need to wait until after the war ends. Bullshit. The war won't end with Netanyahu in there. They need to get Netanyahu out of there and get someone, and I don't know who it would be in Israeli government right now, because frankly, they're all traumatized from October 7th. And I get, you know, if you're not Jewish, I guess you don't feel it. And not all Jews feel it either. I can't make that blanket statement on either end, because I know many non-Jews who agree with me. And I know a lot of Jews who don't. That's the beautiful thing about this. We're allowed to disagree. I've never shut down anyone else's opinion. I will give you mine, but I think you have the right to express yours. I hate the killing. I hate seeing the destruction. I also hate reading the accounts of the people who were massacred or who survived October 7th. And when you talk about genocide, the word is exactly what Hamas is doing to Israel. You know, they're still bombing Israel. Israel just has that Iron Dome defense, and everybody has a bomb shelter in their house or in the neighborhood. That's because the bombs fly constantly from Gaza and Lebanon and other places into Israel. We don't ever hear about that, though, right? Because they have a defense system set up. Good for them. So the casualties are fewer. But the goal of Hamas is to wipe out the state of Israel and every Jew on the planet. That's genocide. The goal of Israel, from what I understand, is to wipe out Hamas. Hamas is not a people. Hamas is a terrorist group. And they hide their operations, their key people who are there. Most of them are out in another country. They hide them in the tunnels that they built, using relief money meant for the people of Gaza to build in the tunnels and under hospitals and schools and residential areas. And again, Hamas has never backed off on its goal to, if there were a ceasefire, what Hamas says is, we'll repeat October 7th again and again and again because it's righteous. No, it isn't. That's genocide. Not what Israel is doing, although what they're doing is immoral in killing so many innocent people. But it's the fault of Hamas because they insist on hiding among the civilians. They don't give a shit about civilian life. So that's my opinion. And if you want to stop following me or stop donating to this show, if you ever did in the first place, there's the door. And if you respect my right to have an opinion that might be different than yours, I'd love for you to stay. And you're welcome to call in and express your opinion. But my God, you call me a genocidal sympathizer again. And, well, I won't do anything because there's nothing I can do. But I'll get really pissed because it's bullshit, because it's opposite world. I talk about opposite world all the time. The genocide is what Hamas wants to perpetrate on every Jew on the planet. And even though I'm not a practicing Jew, that includes me. They would kill me. And if you're gay, they would kill you too. And if you're trans, they would kill you too. When I see people holding signs, queers for Palestine, I want to vomit because they would take your head. All right, off my soapbox after I play this.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So what else am I pissed off about today? Well, there's the tech issues. There's the ineptitude of customer support, which doesn't exist at any of these companies anymore, if it ever did. Bye. People are leaving. Okay. Have fun. By the way, today in history, on this day in 1911, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York, 146 people, mostly young female immigrants, were killed when fire broke out at the Triangle Shirtwaist Company in New York. It's what brought us unions. And thank God we have unions. What else am I pissed about? Ronna McDaniel. What a shill. And NBC News, give me a fucking break. So I got a call from Charlene, one of our listeners who actually lives here in Arizona, right before I was going on the air. And Charlene, I'm sorry if I was short with you. Boy, don't call me 10 minutes before showtime, especially when I'm having tech problems, because I'm not in a good place today, as you can probably tell. I honestly didn't watch her interview on Beat the Press because, frankly, I can't watch Kristen Welker. I mean, I didn't think anyone could be worse than Chuck Todd, but she's up there. But speaking of Chuck Todd, so I saw a clip after the fact that he was there. Now, I guess he still works at NBC, but he was demoted. He's no longer a host of Beat the Press, and he's no longer political director because that's Carrie Budoff Brown, who I guess went there from Politico, you know, that reputable, not Republican publication at all. And here's what I heard. Can I not find this shit? Now I can't find that clip. All right, I know I have it on this computer. Again, tech problems. This thing is not working the way it's supposed to, but what else is new? So Chuck Todd, there he is, was on Beat the Press yesterday. If I can get this to play, I'm just going to play you the audio because I'm taking my life in my hands trying to play video, and of course it doesn't want to load. Is it over here? And it didn't transfer over there. Man, oh man, oh man. God. Okay, here it is. Hold on. All right. So Chuck Todd, so what I hear is, you know, he was political director, but now Carrie Budoff Brown is. So I guess he was demoted and he's got like 3 or 4 months left on his contract. So I guess he knows the writing's on the wall. And why bother, you know, why bother trying to appease the bosses, because he knows he's on his way out. So why not trash him? All right. So here's what, if I can find the play, there it goes. What Chuck Todd said on Meet the Press.
Look, let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation. Because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. Well, I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract.
Aww.
She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it.
Oh, sure.
So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? But once at the RNC, she did say that, hey, I'm speaking for the party. I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here? I think your interview did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination. So it is, that's where you begin here. And so when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News's credibility, you got to ask yourself, what does she bring NBC News? And when we make deals
propaganda.
Like this, and I've been at this company a long time.
Access.
You're doing it for access.
But no.
Access to audience.
Hold on.
Sometimes
he's wrong.
It's access to an individual. Mm-hmm. And we can have a journalistic ethics debate about that. And I'm willing to have that debate. And if you told me we were hiring her as a technical advisor to the Republican convention, I think that would be certainly defensible.
Hear you.
If you told me we're talking to her, but let's see how she does in some interviews and maybe vet her with actual journalists inside the network, see if it's a two-way
actual journalist
the network. So I do think, unfortunately, this interview is always going to be looked through the prism of right. Who is she speaking for,
right?
I think you did everything you could do. You got put into an impossible situation booking this interview, and then all of a sudden the rugs pull out from under you. You find out she's being paid to show up. It's unfortunate for this program, but I am glad you did the best that you could, and that's why the three of us are on here to to try to bolster that editorial independence.
Well, Chuck's there for a few more months anyway. Yeah. Also, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Bye, Chuck. So we've heard all weekend long. We've heard that the staff, producers, talent, underlings at MSNBC are horrified by this move. It's an NBC News decision, but MSNBC, they won't allow for that. Now, I'm still waiting to, and apparently a bunch of them like signed a letter, but no names were attached to it. Well, this morning, I give them credit. I'm not the biggest Morning Jerk fan, but I happened to catch this, and I say good on them.
Let's talk about the hiring of former RNC chair Rhonda McDaniel.
Well, she was on Sunday's Meet the Press. It was her first appearance since since NBC News hired her as a political analyst. I know you won't be surprised to know that we've been inundated with calls this weekend, as have most people connected with this network, about NBC's decision to hire her. We learned about the hiring when we read about it in the press on Friday.
Wow.
We
like
weren't
us.
Asked our opinion of the hiring, but if we were, we would have strongly objected to it for several reasons, including, but not limited to, as lawyers might say, Ms. McDaniel's role in Donald Trump's fake elector scheme.
Right.
And her pressuring election officials to not certify election results while Donald Trump was on the phone.
To be clear, we believe NBC News should seek out conservative Republican voices.
No, you've got plenty of them. You have more than enough of them. How about some progressive voices? No, how about some progressive voices?
Of power to be an anti-democracy election denier, and we hope NBC will reconsider its decision. It goes without saying that she will not be a guest on Morning Joe in her capacity as a paid contributor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to hear. But now we've heard that she won't be on any MSNBC shows. Great. You already hired her. You're paying her hundreds of thousands of dollars a year For what? So she can say, and apparently what she said on Beat the Press was something, I'm paraphrasing, of course, to the effect of, no, I know January 6th was an insurrection. I know Joe Biden won the election, but, you know, you got to take one for the team. What? That was a quote. Take one for the team when you chair the party machine?
Bullshit.
That's bullshit. That's why the Republican Party is what it is today. A shell of itself. Not that it was any great shakes before, but oh my God. So you pay her. So, and as Chuck Toad said, I never thought I'd quote him, but you don't know if she's telling the truth, what she really believes, or what she knows the people paying her want to hear, because that's apparently what she did the whole time she was RNC chair. She said what the people were paying her to say. So why should now be any different? This whole system sucks. And while we're on the subject, let me talk about MSNBC and what I was screaming while that was playing. How about bringing on some progressive voices? If you look at the stable of political analysts and contributors who are all paid commentators, it's filled with Republican never Trumpers. From Charlie Sykes to Michael Steele, he's a host now, to, I don't know, Bill Kristol, to David Jolly. He was a former backbencher Florida Republican congressman who nobody ever heard of. Carlos Curbelo. They bring on these Republicans. This is supposed to be, you know, the at least Democratic leaning alternative to Fox and all the right wing propaganda out there. And it's never Trumper Haven. Heaven Haven. So today I had, in between my fighting with T-Mobile and my fighting with Wirecast and my fighting with Google and YouTube, I happened to check Shitter, which is always a mistake. And I see I call it Shitter because it's X-I-T-T-E-R. If President Xi, spelled X-I, is pronounced she, then X-I-T-T-E-R is Shitter. And it's the most fitting name that they could come up with. Anyway, so I see a shit from, what's his name? Tim Miller. Tim Miller, former Jeb Bush staffer, a Republican, still a Republican. He is one of many Republican paid commentators on MSNBC. And he's usually not bad. But today, he tweeted something. Let me see if I can find it. Here's the thing we've heard for years and years and years. Nuance does not work on social media. So he tweeted, no, I can't find it. It's here somewhere. I was busy today, I guess. No? Why is it? Oh, it was a response. Let's see. Replies. It was, I replied to him. Okay. So Tim Miller chitted. Breaking. New report this morning reveals that a primary shareholder in a Chinese spyware app injected 8 figures into a flailing business run by Hunter Biden right at the moment that he needed a cash infusion to handle his legal problems. Alert. At Rep. James Comer, who heads the Oversight Committee, who's running the sham impeachment of Joe Biden and all that. So I responded with something like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Right? And then two other people responded to me and said, it was a joke. He followed it up because his next tweet said, or his next shit said, wait, sorry, typo on that. It was Donald Trump, not Hunter Biden. We regret the error. It's too late. The damage was done. That first statement, I didn't get the second statement. I didn't see the follow-up. I just see him like, what the hell? Things are so serious right now. We are in danger of becoming the next Hungary under Viktor Trump Orban. And jokes like that aren't funny and they don't work. If he had done it in the same shit, like dot, dot, dot. Oh, wait, it was Donald Trump, not Hunter Biden. That would be one thing. But you let it stand on its own. And this is how disinformation spreads. What don't you get? Yeah, I told you I'm in a mood today. Are we having fun yet? You know, this, it's not time to poke fun at this stuff. It's not funny. Donald Trump might very well skate. Already he had his the money he has to post in order to appeal his fraud conviction lessened from $465 million to $175. Now, it's all monopoly money to me because I don't have $175, let alone $175 million. But why is he Teflon? Why does all this shit not stick to him? Why do people follow this crap and let him get away with it? It's frightening. It is just fucking frightening. And I don't know. Okay, so Sherry messaged me. She said, MSNBC has several progressive voices on their network, not defending the McDaniel hire in any way, shape, or form. I don't understand it at all. David Jolly and several others make a lot of sense these days because they live in the world of reality. Used to see him on other shows a couple of decades ago. He, as many other sane people, have come a long, long way. Right now, we need all sane hands on deck. Can't afford to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm in a very big hurry. What's new? Don't want to anger you. Just hope you hear me. I hear you, Sherry, and I really appreciate your writing. And I appreciate hearing those other voices, too. But when a show comes on, and there are very few MSNBC shows I watch anymore, but say Nicole Wallace or Chris Hayes, two shows I do watch, and they have a panel, and it's three Republicans and one conservadem, because most of them are, I'm like, where's my voice being represented? They're just, you know, and Ronna McDaniel, I'm sorry, make it a little more balanced. Fair and balanced. What a concept that would be. Oh, my God. Sorry, I told you I'm in a mood today. And the tech is just the beginning of it. All right. I see our guest is here. He's probably going to regret ever coming back from vacation. Hold on one second. Let me hide me. Let me bring him up and play that all-important intro. You know what? I was going to put the main logo up. Oh, there it is. We're just, you know, there's a little lag on everything today. Fuck.
It's time for the fucking news from NicoleSandler.com
and Jonathan Larson at thefuckingnews.substack.com.
He said a very bad word.
Oh, the language on you.
You're a fucking newsman.
The fucking
news.
And it kind of worked. Just a little delay and very choppy and stuttery. But Jonathan Larson is back with us. How was your vacation?
It was great. It was good. It fortified me to steel up the courage to face you and join you today, given the mood you're in.
Florida. But you did Florida. Now, you were on the west coast of Florida. Lovely white sandy beaches, right? Did you run into any Nazis or anything while you were there?
No, I mostly just hung out with my old college buddy and didn't do much of anything.
That's good. Now, you know, last Monday when you were out and you weren't here, so I had to fill your time, and I brought on a friend of mine from Florida who is an old friend, and she's very progressive, and she's part of the Progressive Caucus of Florida, and you know all that stuff. It's good. It just is in keeping with my theme today. Anyway, So and now I can't find it. Anyway, she that day you sent out an already like in the can edition of the fucking news, but in the first paragraph you referenced Algernon as a verb, basically. And Algernon is a character in the book Flowers for Algernon, which everybody should have read when they were younger. It's a brilliant book written by Daniel Keyes, Hillary's father. And she was my guest that day.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So it's like, do.
Yeah.
It's like, out of all things, all books for you to reference in that matter. And I already had her, I had her booked like the week before because I knew you weren't going to be here. And I'm like, let's do a Florida roundup because I feel like I'm abandoning you now that I've abandoned you. And then I saw the reference and I sent it to her and I read it. And she's like, oh my God, that's so weird. Just, I guess we're all on the same wavelength.
God help us.
Seriously. Yeah. Flowers for Algernon is a great book. The movie.
Algernon was the mouse, right?
Algernon was the mouse.
Yeah.
In the movie with Cliff Robertson, there were two movies, one called Charlie, and there was one Flowers for Algernon. Charlie was the better movie adaptation with Cliff Robertson. And he was this like mentally retarded man who underwent these. It's been years since I read it. I need to reread it. But basically, they did these experiments and were able to make him smart, and then it sort of went back. But Algernon was the mouse. But you used it as a verb, like he was Algernoned.
Yes.
Oh my God. That was so
If
good.
I remember the reference, right, it was Fox was theorizing that Biden was somehow made competent and cogent
for the State of the Union
through some magic cocktail that, you know, could temporarily, for the length of one speech, render him in that state. So, yeah, I think that was the reference.
It was exactly the reference. But Hillary loved it. She was like, she was blown away. But I was too, because it's just weird. You wrote that in advance. I had her booked in advance on the day that you're supposed to be. So anyway, it's one of those cosmic things that there's no explanation for. And it doesn't mean anything, but we can pretend it does.
Coincidences happen.
Yeah. Although some people say there are no coincidences.
Yes, and they are wrong because there are coincidences.
Gotta be. All right, so the big kerfuffle this weekend, and you did address it in today's The Fucking News, although further down, is the Ronna McDaniel. Now, you're a veteran of MSNBC. Those who don't know, Jonathan Larson used to be a producer for Keith Olbermann's Countdown. You put up with Chris Hayes on the air when it was the weekend show. So, you know, you've been around the inner workings there. What do you think was the reaction? Because apparently they didn't warn anybody on staff about this hire. Joe Scarborough this morning said that they read about it on Friday when everyone else read about it. What do you think was the reaction in the building?
I mean, I would guess it was pretty close to that clip that you played from Morning Joe, that they were surprised. And I read another piece, I don't remember who it was, that said that there was no consultation inside the building before making this decision. But I don't know how common that has ever been.
No.
Now, in terms of, usually in terms of when you bring someone on as a contributor, you want to know that they'll have somewhere to contribute. So you want, if you're an executive at the network and you think of your shows as your clients, your customers, you want to know, is there any interest in the thing that I'm about to buy for them? Will they put this person on my programs? So usually there's a sense already baked in, but it also could just be in their defense that they thought, you know, we're heading into an election year. Of course, we would want the most recent former chair of the RNC. And for what they do, I think there's a case to be made for putting that person on. I would argue that the bigger problem is what they do.
Right.
To your point about like they need more progressive voices, that may be true, but I would also argue, why do we need voices, right? Why do we need people who are hired to have opinions? These are ostensibly news outlets.
Right.
Let's get people on who know things to tell us things.
Report the news. What a concept.
And you can take the time to contextualize it and give historical background to it. But that means booking people who know facts than people who are just brought on to spout like you and I talked before the show, and I will tell you, I don't know about that thing that you might be discussing.
Right. So let's not
go there.
Right, Right. Because you need to know what topics are. But think
in
about what Chuck Todd said. So Chuck Todd said, well, it's all about access. The NBC is trying to immunize themselves and cover the bases so that if Trump gets back in, they'll have access. But you made a great point in today's fucking newsletter that Trump hates her. She was drummed out of there. If anything, he'd be pissed about it. It wouldn't give them access. Am I?
And the other faction of the Republican Party isn't happy with her for having enabled Trump.
Right.
So exactly. You know, and the other point I tried to make in this morning's fucking news was that they said in their internal email, here is what we expect her to bring to the table, right? And it was, the idea was that she has a unique perspective and that will result in unique points of view and unique newsworthy information. And we very quickly were able to test that with Sunday's appearance. And if it hasn't escaped anyone's notice, There were no headlines out of that interview that weren't meta headlines about the fact that she was there at all. But
right.
what actually did we learn from that interview that was worth that day's fraction of 300,000, that was worth that day's, you know, the ongoing controversy on it, that was worth sacrificing your airtime to put that person on the air? What unique, salient, smart, profound insights did we get? And what information did we get that hasn't been out there already? I saw one headline that said McDaniel says there are tensions between Trump and the RNC. Get out.
Right.
Get out. Are you kidding?
Well, the RNC is now owned by Trump. Now that
End
Ron is out there, his daughter-in-law is running the place. I mean, come on, you can't make this stuff up.
Or shouldn't, yeah.
No.
And look, the other thing I said in the newsletter, which I hope people will check out and subscribe to, is that there actually were meaningful, factual questions that you could have asked.
Oh, yes.
Ronna McDaniel, and still can, right? She's still on the company dime. There's nothing preventing someone on MSNBC even from saying, you know what, we'd like to have you come on for an extended period of time and help us map out, what did the org chart look like? Who recommended hiring these people? What background did they have? What did they do while they were there?
That's
what
right.
were they asked to do and not and refused to do? Well, like, there's all kinds of insights we can get to into exactly how the RNC was operating at a time when Trump was already influencing what it was doing on a daily basis. And the Election Integrity Unit, my understanding from other reporting, is the only unit that survived. Okay, who's on the Election Integrity Unit? How were they hired? Who recommended them? Mm-hmm. What was the vetting like for these people? What did they do while they were there? What kind of things did they say? There are lots and lots and lots of valuable pieces of information that a news organization could get from her and make
oh,
public.
Yes. Questions that you put, who's funding Republicans? Who are the dark money donors? Hello, I'll be really curious. I don't normally watch Rachel Maddow. I will watch her tonight to see if she says anything about this. Because if anyone should say, you know what, as a rule, we're not going to have her on our air, but I'm going to take advantage of this moment and I'm going to have her on for a hard hitting interview and I'm going to ask her the tough questions. You think she'll do it?
I try not to do the will X or Y yeah. happen kind of thing, which is one of the reasons I'm not a network pundit. But I do think, you know, to your point, there are defensible reasons for putting her on the air. I don't know that I can make a case for defending paying for
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Put her on the air, but don't pay her hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Again, what I can't believe I'm quoting Chuck Todd, what he said. I don't know if what she's saying is how she really feels or it's what she wants to say to please the people who are paying her so she doesn't put her contract in jeopardy.
So I would disagree with that, I gotta say, for a couple reasons. One is everyone you're listening to on pretty much any network,
paid.
For the most part, they're getting paid, right? So that's sort of the price of admission. But also, as she established, she was not honest when she was working at the RNC. So
right. Were you lying to me, then, or are you lying now? That's the classic question, or both.
Right. So I don't, that didn't move me a lot as an argument, I got to say. And look, I get the moral horror of a journalism organization writing a check to someone with that kind of resume and history. I get that entirely, but I don't know that it's especially salient a point in terms of whether or not she's credible. That's the model for tons of people that appear on the air, is for them to be paid. And look, they whether they're told to hew to certain lines or not, there's no way you're not conscious of not wanting to lose that contributor deal next whenever it runs out. So to some extent, yeah, but that's the same critique of the Ronna McDaniel money can be applied to anyone who's being paid to be on the air. And to be honest, even the folks who aren't paid, they have financial incentives to say outrageous things, right? To become famous and capitalize off of that. So everyone, like Dylan said, right? You got to serve somebody. Everyone's got incentives, and some of them are to be honest and some of them are to be dishonest. And ideally, a journalistic outlet, one of the things they do is ensure that the incentives when you're appearing on that program are driving you to be honest.
Yeah. And again, I think the whole paid contributor thing is crazy. We joke that, you know, whether it's Charlie Sykes or whoever it is each week, someone's got a cot in the back room and they call them out every time they need somebody. You know, these people are paid. And I don't know what, you know, there's millions of people out there, if they want opinions, who they can get opinions from that they don't have to pay, because a regular guest comes on, they don't get paid. Just the contributors and the analysts. That's how you know that they're being paid.
I mean, I think there's a certain practical logic to having a stable of people that you know are TV tested, right? There are people, present company included, who aren't necessarily the best on TV. Not you, by the way, I meant me. And you want, as a producer, you want a certain known quantity that you can call up and say, holy moly, we need someone, can you join us in half an hour? And that understandably it may involve paying them. I get the sort of practical logic of that. My concern is the, we need someone with an opinion.
Yes.
Right?
That model, I agree.
Yeah, that to me, and that is a dynamic that no one questions. We just sort of assume that's a given.
Right.
That's the only kind of TV that succeed. I would say that's not the case.
Not the case.
That's right.
But we don't know because nobody's willing to do it, you know, to do a straight news channel, please. And every time I think we're going to get one, we don't. So, Jonathan Larson, there's another big story today. So Trump had two separate things happening with the former guy this morning. One was his court date in New York, where he tried to get a complete postponement of the fraud trial. That's the Stormy Daniels hush money trial that was supposed to begin today. But because SDNY was late in turning over documents, we still don't really know why. They got a delay.
I think they blame the DOJ for that.
Yeah, I know. Well, yes. Yeah, it shouldn't have happened. But the judge in that case, and I have it written down somewhere, set
Engoron,
the
trial. Right?
No, that's not Engoron. This case, it's Marchand. That's fine. And he set the date for April 15th. So three things in life are certain: taxes, death, and Trump, right, going to trial. We'll see. So that happened. But the other one with Engoron, I guess the appeals panel ruled that Trump doesn't have to come up with $464 million. We'll lower it to $175. Now, as I said earlier, to me, it's all monopoly money. It would make a difference. But to Trump, this is the difference between him defaulting and probably being able to come up with the money. And why is he so Teflon? Why does he always catch a pass?
Well, I'm not sure he would agree that he has gotten away scot-free here.
No, right? This would have paved the way for some of his properties to be seized. And I guess in the bigger picture, it's better that it's not, because, you know, he makes himself out a martyr and his followers are fucking crazy. So, you know, but it's just so infuriating. If it was you or I, you or me, sorry, I hate that. If it was you or me, we would be held accountable for every dime. We're not going to get off with them lowering it by 3/4. Oh, you can just pay less.
Well, I will. I do want to say a couple things. One is, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm probably not equipped, not having read in on today's hearing, to sort of judge whether it was an unfair thing. But in general, as a progressive, I tend to like when justice is not overly harsh. I would rather see justice err on the side of mercy. Now, that said, I certainly want that to apply equally to everyone, if not more so to people without means. Mm-hmm. But it's I try not to reflexively say, you know, that we want tougher penalties. So
no,
that's
my disclaimer there. All right, I get that.
And the other thing I would say is that I've seen what you've said a lot, echoed a lot, the idea that if he's seen as a martyr, he'll be able to inspire, you know, horrific, let's not get into specific actions by his followers. I tend to, as I am wont to do, I tend to take the contrarian position on that. And what I mean by that is that I don't think being a martyr works for the Trump brand. I think martyr is not that far off from loser. Right? Well, a martyr is someone who gets killed.
Yes.
And I think what people who like Trump like about him is his lie that he is hugely successful and wins all the time, right? Didn't he say that back in 2016?
We're going to get so tired of winning. You're going to get tired of winning, all the winning.
I think what's more likely is they'll be disheartened and disenchanted by flagrant losing. And I think, you know, him having to write a check to Letitia James
for $175 million.
Yeah, I think
it's still a lot of money.
I think that takes a little bit of the bloom off the orange rose here to some extent.
However, but he bragged just the other day. I currently have almost $500 million in cash, a substantial amount of which I intended to use in my campaign for president. Well, if you've got $500 million in cash, you can pay for 64 or whatever it was.
Sure. Yeah, of course. And again, I haven't read in on the hearing, so I don't know whether he pleaded hardship, which is one justification, or whether he was pleading that it was unjust, which has no relation to whether or not he can or cannot pay, right? He could have, $10 billion in cash, and it still would be lowered because it's not a fair amount. So I think that was probably more his argument. So the fact that he kind of blew up his own hardship argument by claiming to have almost $500 million might not have been germane to today's ruling, would be my guess.
Right. You know, I'm looking at, I glance over at the chat room all the time because I like the listeners' input, and our pal Spocko's in there. He says, I'd like to know the reasons behind why Trump got the bond reduced. What threat worked? And I guess we need to know, you know, I never questioned the partisan proclivities of judges to the extent that I do now. So it was, I think this was a 5-judge panel. I want to know who those judges were and who appointed them. It used to not be of concern. Now it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the case. And I would sort of make the argument that we probably should have been asking those questions consistently throughout this country's history. It's just that the norms were so baked in that we weren't paying attention. And we also didn't have one of the party's leaders openly suggesting that the judgeships are rigged, which to some extent he's got a point about. It just happens that most of them are rigged towards him, right? The Trump nominees and appointees are inclined. It's an asymmetric dynamic. They're inclined to favor him. Mm-hmm. Democratic appointees are inclined
to follow the law.
The rules,
right? To follow the law.
They're going by the rules, and Trump's loyalists are going towards what favors Trump. And no one is biased towards the left or progressives or the Democratic Party.
Not even the so-called liberals on the extreme court. They don't.
Right. Which we should not want.
We don't want that. We want them all to follow the law. See, that's the rub, as they say. Right. And it's, you know, even during the confirmation processes, though, when Trump was putting all these nominees up, and we'd read one after another that they were deemed not qualified by the American Bar Association, and the Republicans still put them in. You know, I did hear, I saw a clip of Marco Rubio on one of the Sunday shows, because the rumor is he's being floated as a vice presidential pick. And he said he would be honored if Trump. Well, I remember the debate, little Marco, and, you know, all the back and forth, and look, I have a potty mouth. I speak in crass analogies, but I'm not fucking president, nor do I aspire to be. I'm not in government. I'm not in elected office. I do a fucking show on the internet now. So I'm supposed to have outlandish opinions and say stupid things. It's okay. When I hear little Marco and the hands are small and all this, and now Marco Rubio turns around and says, oh, I'd be honored to be his vice presidential pick because things were so much better when he was in office. What planet are we on?
Well, look, I do think, again, this may get me in trouble, but I do think there's something kind of like laudable about people being willing to put these past personal slights in the past, and to some extent, right, this is not an uncommon perspective among successful Republican politicians, that it's a game. And so when Trump said the, you know, rude things he said, they're probably seen in that context as a game. But I would also say that if you are going to be aghast, right, if you're going to be horrified by the notion of being Trump's vice president, I would argue that there are about 4,000 reasons for that are more important and should weigh on you more than the fact that he was personally insulting.
Oh, without a doubt. Or things like, you know,
Trump is a fucking idiot.
Okay, that's Lindsey Graham. Trump is a fucking idiot. And
I think he's a kook. I think he's crazy. I think he's unfit for office.
Okay. I don't believe he's a Republican. His policies are really bad for the country.
He's a jackass. And you know how you make America great
Keep
again?
Keep going, Lindsey.
Tell Donald Trump to go to hell.
Okay, so just a few random clips from Lindsey Graham, who now, you know, is putting his life on the line. And it makes me think, okay, what pictures does Donald Trump have of Lindsey in drag or something?
I guess, but you know what? Everyone else has fallen in line too, right? The number of people who haven't is incredibly minuscule. So Trump must have a binder full of photographs.
I guess.
Or there's some other dynamic at work here, which I think is much more likely. And look, a lot of these folks have come up through cultures of hazing and loyalty tests, right? This is not that unusual, right? We have that in our military. We have that in fraternities. We have this in all kinds of institutions where you are expected to abandon critical thinking. You are expected to abandon, you know, to be selfless and loyal to the leader, sometimes not just despite their craziness, but because of their craziness. Like that, them being crazy is an opportunity for you to prove how unthinking you are and loyal, right? Because this is an anti-intellectual movement. So to prove that you are moved by things other than the cold, calculating functions of your brain sponge meat, that's a plus in this playbook.
Yeah, you know, forget about finding someone who's fit for office. We'll go with the unfit guy. But I'll tell you something. I hold a grudge. Maybe it's the Scorpio in me. You're in New York, Jonathan, right? So, you know, Jim Kerr is a morning man on Q104.3. This last week was his 50th anniversary on the air doing mornings in New York radio. Huge.
I listened to the Huge. Howard Stern
Okay, so
that
that's what this
vacation.
Is about. At the very beginning, so I used to work with Jim. I was his producer from 1985 to 1987 at WPLJ in New York.
Wow.
And it was during that time that Jim, after we got off the air, he would go to O'Neill's on 57th Street. He held court there. It was his office. People knew he was going to be there. People would come by and hang with him, have a glass of wine and talk. One day, Howard Stern comes in, is having lunch. Jim went over and said hello. And when they did the interview in the opening moments, because I just listened to it this weekend, finally, and Howard says, I don't think we've ever met before. And Jim said, oh, yes, we met once. It was in the 80s. And Howard's like, where, when, what? At O'Neill's, you were there with Dong Buchwald, his agent, having lunch. And I came over to congratulate you on the birth of your daughter. And Howard's like, oh, that was so nice. I don't remember. And then he changed the subject. And I'm going, I have held a grudge. I've hated Howard Stern for all these years because Jim came in the next morning and said, you'll never believe who I met yesterday, Howard Stern. And he came into O'Neill's and I went over and I talked to him and he couldn't have been nicer. He was like a regular guy. We had a great conversation. He was really nice. I was so surprised and I'm pleasantly surprised. Then the phone started.
But why then did you hold the grudge?
Then the phone started ringing. Oh. Listeners saying Stern is trashing Jim on the air, calling him a lush, saying he goes to O'Neill's after work and drinks and gets drunk every day. And I mean, went on and on, bad mouthing him, just totally trashing him. And Jim, much to his credit, never went back to it because Howard changed the subject. And I bet he did remember and was embarrassed because they were on the air for 45 minutes together and had a wonderful conversation. And Jim was Howard was all fawning all over him. Yeah. And but for all these years, the whole world turned to Howard Stern, great king of all media. And I'm like, that fucking asshole. What a piece of shit he is. And I've held on to that. And so yes, I hold a grudge, but you know, people say one thing and do another, I guess.
I get it. I guess my practical reason for being kind of soft on this kind of thing is that if we don't leave room open for people to redeem themselves, they won't.
Right.
Right. If you're going to be punished forever, then there's no incentive for them to redeem themselves or to atone.
True.
And in fact, the only avenue they have is to become a worse person and try to, you know, succeed in that sphere, which, by the way, is something I wrestle with all the time, right? My newsletter is very new. I don't have the momentum that I would like on the newsletter just yet. And so I have that, you know, I have that voice in my head, like, you know what? Go be an a-hole.
Right.
Go trash someone. But the point of the newsletter, the point of the fucking news is to try to model and advocate for a better perspective on news and a better telling of news. Now that doesn't mean that I'm not, you know, sardonic and edgy and all that stuff, but I try not to demonize anyone.
Right.
Not because they're not bad, but because our news shouldn't be in the bad assessment business. Sorry.
So Rob. Agree. However, that's how Howard got to where he is. So years later, I left Jim, moved out to Los Angeles. I'm producing the number one morning show in LA, Mark and Brian. Howard Stern comes to town. We were number one. We dethroned Rick Dees. We're number one riding. Mark and Brian are like big overgrown little boys. Their shtick was so entirely different from Stern's. They never listened to a show. We made a point that we didn't listen. We ignored what he was doing. It was not, and he targeted them because they were number one. And the day when he beat them finally, and he did, held a huge funeral for them. He couldn't have been ruder, more mean-spirited. So that on top of the Jim Kerr thing, I've had this immense dislike for Howard Stern all these years. And it pisses me off that he's like, oh, he's the greatest. No, he's really not. He just has big balls. And he'll ask people whatever is on his mind, but he's in the position now where he can.
Yes.
So anyway, that's, you know, there's a reason behind all this anger, damn it.
Of course it's justified, right? And that's the tension we have is how do we honor the justice motivated impulses behind that, right? You're not angry at him for something trivial or made up. These were real slights that had a real impact on real people.
That I was directly involved in too. So it's not even just secondhand. It's like I lived through both of these.
It's not abstract. It's not theoretical. These were people you knew and worked with and respected. And you probably saw to some extent the pain, hurt that they suffered at
without
his hands. So of course you would want to feel that way. That's why it's hard when people like that change. That's why it's hard to say, okay, good. Yep. I'm glad you're changing.
Well, that's why I wish that Jim had gone back at the end to say, by the way, that day at O'Neill's, you went on the air the next morning and completely trashed me and called me a lush and a drunk and have him at least apologize. You know, he got off scot-free, and I owe Jim a phone call because I'm going to say that to him. It's lived with me for, 35 years now, and I guess it will for the rest of my days.
But think about what it says about Jim Kerr, right?
That's Jim.
That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What a powerful element of grace he was able to bring to that. Not just to not mention it, but to not mention it for 45 minutes.
That's right. And he submitted to all of Stern's questions about his childhood and his father and his son. And Jim was a good sport. That's Jim. He's exactly how he was when we worked together. That's just Jim. He's a good guy. And that's why it was so devastating that he came in raving, well, how nice Howard was, and then he just trashed him. It's like, God, people suck. Mean people suck. And that's mean. So, yeah. And the funeral thing in L.A., it was just, he attacked us all. He didn't know us. We did nothing like what they did. Totally different show, but it didn't matter.
Well, I do think there's an element there that everyone, including the left, has to be really aware of and sort of be present about, mm-hmm. which is the idea that, like, to Howard Stern, was it Mark and Brian, you said, mm-hmm. you two guys? Mm-hmm. Like, to him, they were abstractions.
Right.
Or worse than abstractions.
Just number one. He would go into every market and target whoever was number one. It didn't matter. Right. And he'd do the same thing. They're stealing my shtick.
And you can do that when you don't sort of force yourself to live with the reality that those are human beings mm-hmm. who can hear what you say, mm-hmm. will have feelings about what you say, and that will ripple throughout their lives. Like this is the human project of not being assholes. But where it's really hard to do that is when we have just cause to dislike that person, to think that they have done a bad thing, to want justice done that person.
Donald Trump.
I know.
See, it all goes full circle.
But that's what makes it so hard, but also so essential, that we never lose sight of the fact that people who do bad things are literally just as human as we are. And it's not about being nice to them or anything like that. It's about preserving our own humanity, that we have to keep in mind the humanity of all humanity.
Absolutely.
Harumph.
Harumph. Jonathan Larson, thefuckingnews.substack.com. Go subscribe. You can get the free version. Start there, and then you'll probably want to sign up, and get the paid version too, because, look, we work, it's Marcy Wheeler as well. Marcy Wheeler's here every Friday. She also, emptywheel.net, is not behind a paywall. My show is not behind a paywall. You can get the fucking news not behind a paywall, but we hope, all of us, that you will get something out of the offerings we serve up, that you'll want to support the work we do, because that's the times we live in now.
And I wouldn't compare myself to Marcy Wheeler, but
nor do I. But I'm just honored. Yes.
But one of the things that I do that she does as well is we also do original reporting. We're mm-hmm. not just, I have opinions about things. We're actually reporting news
and
surfacing information that will never be known, sometimes literally, unless we're doing the work we do, which, I'm fortunate that some people, again, it's gonna need to be more at some point.
I hear you.
Some people are chipping in, and it both fills my heart and breaks my heart knowing knowing that there are people out there never met me, don't know me,
right.
have no idea
right.
what a shitty excuse for a human being I am
you
in
are.
My, you know, in
but
my
yes.
life, like everyone is, right?
Right?
We all have failings, but there they are anyway.
Right. It is
saying,
amazing.
You know,
when you get the notification that someone got a paid subscription, or I get that there's a new recurring membership to my show, it's like, oh my God, I try to write to everybody when I get that. And I say, words can't express how much I appreciate it. And
yeah.
I speak for a living, but I cannot express how much I appreciate you supporting the work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I truly mean it, because without them, I don't know what I'd be doing, working at Walmart. No, I wouldn't. Costco, maybe. But, you know, you get the idea. Anyway, mm-hmm. Jonathan Larson, thefuckingnews.substack.com. Go subscribe. And I will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right. Tomorrow, Amy Simon will be here. It's still Women's History Month for a few more days. So Amy Simon of SheSHistory.com will be here. She's an old dear friend of mine who used to do a regular weekly thing on the show. And she'll be here to tell us about some of the our founding mothers. She's a cultural historian. And she's got, do you know who the first woman who ran for president was?
I don't. I might recognize the name when you say it, so I'm curious, but I don't.
Victoria Woodhull.
Name's familiar, but yeah, tell me the story. I don't know the story.
You'll have to listen tomorrow. There you go. All right.
Okay.
Jonathan, we'll see you next week, and Amy Simon tomorrow. And thank you. And sorry about the gremlins. I may switch out this computer tonight because this is my life.
It was pretty painless for what it's worth.
Oh, it's just watching it wasn't necessarily. I mean, it's very stuttering and yeah. And you should see on my end, it's not fun. So I may bring back the old, you don't need to know. Just know I'm working for you people, to try to rid the gremlins. And, okay. See you tomorrow. Bye. Bye. Thanks, Jonathan, and everyone else. Peace out.